so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think we could be in store for an all-timer toy department today. It could get very interesting. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky, and he has not slept as of the recording of this podcast. When was the last time you went to bed, Matt Kolsky?
I woke up at approximately, let's see, what did I do Wednesday? I woke up at around 10:30 Wednesday morning.
All right. And as we take this now.
9:10 a.m. Thursday morning.
So things could get a little loopy is what you're saying.
I'm going to get to 24 hours right around the time this podcast ends.
Awesome. Have you been up just binging television shows?
In large part, yes.
all right. Well,
it's not the only thing I've done, but it's a large part of what I've done. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in that spirit,
I got problems.
You got the. I think so. Yeah. I have to say, I don't like, and I guess
I can't remember the last time I actually stayed up all night. Maybe like got a couple hours of sleep before an early plane flight or something. But I'm a big sleeper. This was really an anomaly.
Yeah, this is a very. I said this in the prep. It's a very college sophomore move of you.
Yeah, totally. And as I said to you then, I don't think my body will handle it well.
Now, did you?
I feel good right now, though.
Is there like some Adderall in the mix? No. Did you take some no-dos or something?
A little bit of coffee.
Just coffee. All right.
Yep. Artificial enhancements. I did have a Pliny the Elder with dinner last night, which was delicious, but I don't think contributed to being awake all night.
No, that would I'd probably take it the opposite way would be my guess.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I had a 93X Brotherhood beer last night. Plug.
Hey.
Yeah. All right, so.
Still haven't gotten my case in the mail, but.
You know, it's really hard to mail beer.
Yeah,
across state lines. I believe that is a jailable offense. So,
yeah, excuses.
And it's not like you could just hide, you know, a 4-pack of tall boys either. But we'll get it to you somehow, right. Some way. So, okay. You know, it actually does. This whole thing does sort of bring up your binging habits, which I think are kind of interesting.
I don't know. I thought about this a lot because I am midway through season 2 of The Leftovers, which I had seen one episode of last we spoke. And now that's, you know, like 14 episodes or something like that I've watched in the course of a week.
That is it's not a lot of shows. Like we talked about this, like there are not a lot of episodes per se of The Leftovers, but that's a heavy binge, man.
It is a heavy binge, but what's interesting, and that's why I was going to say, I think the bite size sort of backlog was a huge factor. And also all the raving I hear from you and others about how good this season is and a desire to catch up and be part of that conversation. But also I have to say, and maybe I would have been annoyed and depressed with it had I not heard about how like miserable and depressing it was. I was maybe just overprepared for it, but I found it actually not too bad. And I did, even that first season, find it super engaging. And Carrie Coon is just phenomenal.
Yeah, I mean, she's
incredible.
I think that's why you give the warnings about how depressing it is, because you want people to be prepared and ready to deal with. In the first season, like, you know, especially a lot of the Kevin Garvey stuff and just, you know, the dog killing and, you know, like
there's
like
some weird, depressing stuff, no doubt. But I'm just saying, I think because I was so ready for that, it didn't feel out of the ordinary, and I was able to really enjoy it. Yeah, and so part of it was I just got into it. It's a really well-made show and has some great acting.
Yes, and the storytelling is great, the acting is great, and you're in season one, there's no Regina King, right? So
yeah, she's in it now, and you know, sort of a new mystery. It's I'm all in. I'm all in on The Leftovers, and we'll talk about it once I catch up.
That makes me very happy. I literally said, Kolsky sent me a thing about, hey, maybe we should talk about this, and I just finally, like, all caps, like, I don't want to talk about anything. Do you watch the goddamn Leftovers?
That did happen.
Because I want to be able to talk about season three.
That's a real exchange. And I can only imagine how crazy things have gotten because, I'm midway through season two, and things are already spinning so wildly out of control that I do hope I get some answers soon.
This show is so balls out. And daring, you know what I mean? Like, it just in the willingness to go to just the strangest places.
It's very strange,
but it's all underpinned by, I'll say this, you know, because many millions of more people watched Lost than watched The Leftovers. And if you liked, forget about the ending and whatever, if you just liked the way that show told stories.
And played out its mystery.
Yes, and brought in characters, right? Like, gave you more depth about the people involved, then you'll like the show. Because no matter how crazy it gets or all the things that are happening or the underpinning of it is, Damon Lindelof knows how to structure a story. Yeah. And I should also say, too, that it's a visually breathtaking show, especially by season two. I think they really found their visual style as well, so...
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I tend to agree.
All right, so we'll get more into Leftovers as we go.
I should be caught up in 2 weeks, if not by next week.
Let's talk about the other show that made me wonder about just how much time you have.
Yeah,
and that's 13 Reasons Why, because I'd thrown this out there a couple of weeks ago. At the time, I had seen maybe four of them, and I was moving along at kind of a pretty normal pace. Mm-hmm. And you had expressed some reservations, and then we turned around by last week, and you had watched all 13 of them.
Yes.
Which it seems to me to have taken a Herculean effort.
In a way, yes. In a way, no. Because then I think I said this last week, I found it very engaging and entertaining. I feel like I'm overusing those words, but it was. And also, as I said last week, like, especially as I got towards the end, I felt like I really had to finish it so I could talk about it and make sure I wasn't missing something.
Yeah, and so I did finish it this week. You know, I feel like I should issue something of a mea culpa in that when I first threw this out, you know, four episodes in, I'm like, yeah, the subject matter's pretty heavy, but... You know, the way the story's set up, it's really like
it's
a mystery.
It's not a bad time.
It's almost like Veronica Mars, you know, like the guys going around talking to people, trying to find clues. It won't be so bad.
And you weren't wrong, but that is a huge part of the problem.
Well, based on the information I had at the time, I feel like that was a fair statement.
Yeah, it was. It was. No, I'm not. I don't hold that against you at all.
Yeah.
But
having seen all of them now, I would very much like to retract that.
Yeah, well, except that, again, those first four episodes, it is like Veronica Mars, and that just underscores how inappropriate the whole damn thing is.
Okay, so let's
spoiler alert it quickly.
Yeah, this is deep spoilers if you haven't heard about this season or are planning to watch it. We're going to get into the end.
We're going to go all the way here.
Yeah.
This is a show... about a girl who commits suicide after spending what must have been days, if not weeks, pre-recording tapes that essentially quippily and lightheartedly blame her friends for her suicide. And of the 13 sides of tapes she records, about eight or nine of them are unfortunate, ranging between irrelevant and unfortunate, but very typical high school slights or bullies or what have you. And then there's some violent rape at the end. Yeah. And
yeah.
I look, I'm not a suicide expert, but I find it very hard to believe that this is a real thing. That there are really people who are coherent and just like non-despondent enough after a violent rape to record tapes that include a lot of lighthearted stuff in them and then deliver said tapes and then slit one's wrist open in gory on-screen fashion. I find it hard to believe that there are real people who do this sort of thing. To commit suicide in most cases, certainly for a healthy high schooler, is either the result of huge traumatic, it's the result of a, in my understanding, the result of a knee-jerk and unthinking response to a huge traumatic event, or the elaborate plans of a truly sick, mentally ill person. And none of that is addressed in the show. In fact, they kind of make the poor sucker who she tortures from the grave the guy who's dealing with mental health issues, which is weird and disturbing.
Well, sorry, when you say the poor sucker that she tortures from the grave, which character are you referring to?
I mean the lead character.
Clay. Yeah.
But also, like, there's so many more problematic things. For instance, this, I guess we're meant to take away that the rape is the thing that ultimately drove her to suicide more than anything else. But certainly that is not conveyed to the people who have to listen to themselves being excoriated for being mean in the locker room one time.
I don't know that we're meant to. I feel like we're meant to think that it is the cumulative.
Okay, maybe.
In fact, either way, if any of us had been her friend, had really been her friend, this wouldn't have happened. You know what I mean?
I know, but that's so. I just don't buy that as a real thing. And I think suicide, especially of a high school student, is such a serious thing to undertake that to do it in a way like this, it just seems irresponsible to me. And then, you know, ultimately, the show ends with, you know, people injured, people mentally disturbed. One guy is in the hospital having attempted a suicide of his own. And then a couple of the other characters are just driving off into the sunset, like waving their hands like, out the top of a convertible.
Like it's the end of Fast and Furious.
Exactly. Like I couldn't believe that. Of all the ways for it to end, that I can't think of something that's a better microcosm of everything wrong with the show. Another huge problematic thing for me is that, again, like I don't know what we're supposed to feel for this girl, but she's certainly played as a protagonist in as much as she is a character on the show, which she is. And
yeah, now remember in the movie that was originally planned for this, that part is the Selena Gomez. Right? So
yeah,
that is,
I know.
Right? Yes, your eye is supposed to be trained on her and Clay, right? It's really kind
right.
of their story.
And then to have this love story that you know at the start ends in suicide, and even if you didn't, why tell that story? And like, how about the fact that her alleged friend, who she again craps all over on several tapes, then finds out via tape 10 or 11 that she was raped? Like,
yeah. Okay, so. I'll get into my stuff here a little bit because I come at this differently than you. I feel like it's not really suicide is, you know, and just high school angst in general. is so personal and so unique. I don't know that I personally feel like I could go, well, oh, that's not how it would play out, or, oh, a person wouldn't be capable of this. Certainly, I think the things that happened to this person would be They're enough horrifying. To lead some people to suicide. I'm okay with that. You know, the actual depiction of the suicide was hard. In fact, I just kind of looked away.
It was incredibly extreme.
I felt unnecessarily graphic. I could, however, buy at least the idea that maybe that was put in there as, you know, trying to be responsible and show people how awful something like this really is to discourage them. Yeah, that I could buy. My issue is a lot less with the suicide, and I really feel like this show, and I'm going to say some words that I think are just kind of, I don't know, things you might hear, you know, super PC buzz signifiers, but I really felt like this show fetishized rape. And the treatment of rape was really weird. The depiction of rape, the way that, like, these things were, like, lingered on.
Yeah. I completely
agree.
And
shot in close-up and all this, like, moaning. It was so unnecessary and so long. And for to do that, not once but twice.
Yep.
And then on top of that, the idea – look, I get that everyone kind of had some embarrassing – you know, all the people who were on these tapes had some embarrassing things
right.
that happened. But there's a dude in your peer group who commits
who's a serial rapist.
Rapes. And no one says it. Like, I just can't. And everyone's like, no, we can't possibly say anything about the rapist in
right.
our school raping our friends. That
right.
seems insane to me.
When, like, the things they're going to be exposed for is, like, making out with another girl when you shouldn't have.
Yeah, one guy
it's
was
like, seriously?
One guy said some, like, mean stuff to her.
Right. One guy asked her out and then was kind of a dick.
Yeah.
Like, what? And then another guy committed two fucking rapes. I mean, I'm sorry. It's just not. And again, to have the just the tone of the tapes made me super uncomfortable.
Yeah. So, you know, there's that. And then there are a couple of I thought hacky dramatic devices, you know, that are really sort of central to the show. The first is, like, you know, the cut on Clay's forehead.
Yeah.
That gets opened and reopened so that you can tell how,
what
you know, yeah, whether you're
watching
in the past or the present. Now,
yep.
I get it. It was helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. Logistically helpful, artistically, like, obnoxious.
Yeah. And this was not in the original book, I've learned. The fact that it literally takes this dude weeks.
Yeah.
To listen to these tapes about the woman he loved and how she
right.
committed suicide and all his friends, and you know you're on there, and you're on there.
Oh,
the
and that's the
end.
Other thing. He's literally on there for no fucking reason at all.
Oh yeah, I forgot that part too. And that's
he's
the
literally there for no reason. And it's another thing where, like, you took all the time to make these tapes, and you say on this tape, you love this guy, you know he loves you, and, like, oh well. Too bad it didn't work out because I got to go kill myself.
Right,
like, what is going on?
Oh, I just needed this to tell the story, so you're on here.
Right.
But
it's like inconsistent with it. Just it feels so weird to me.
Don't forget, that for literally 7, 8, 9, 10 episodes, everyone who talks to Clay when he's running around is like, well, did you hear your tape yet? You haven't gotten
right.
your tape. Just wait till you get
know,
to your tape. And there's like she lets him off the hook in the first 30 seconds.
Right. And they know that. But never say anything to him.
At
they also
point,
know
he asked,
that everyone.
Did I kill him?
They also know,
like,
everybody
yeah.
got raped.
Yeah. So there's some things that don't make sense in this show for sure. However, like you said, it is engaging. Like it.
Yeah.
You know, there are things worth seeing here, and there's a reason that both of us made it through all 13 episodes.
Yeah, it's not poorly made. It's not. You know, it's. Some of the kids are really good, I think. It's so problematic. Problematic is the word. It's so deeply troubling to me in so many ways. I can't in good conscience recommend it.
Yeah. And then there's just the whole idea that, like, Clay's parents, who literally suspect that something is going horribly amiss with their kid for like 10 episodes
right.
are just like, yeah, it's don't tell us. It's fine. You'll on your own time.
Well,
you'll let us know.
They keep being like, it's really important to be more open. And he's like, cool. And then he says nothing and goes to his room. And they're like, man,
yeah.
I wish we could get him to be more open.
This guy's like not coming home at night. And, like, you know, they're just like, ah, all right, well, he'll tell us when he's ready.
It's like, right. And everything he does say to them sounds completely like off the wall nuts.
Yeah. Yeah. God, now that we're picking this apart, maybe I don't recommend the show. I don't know.
No, I mean, it's just not. It's not, what's weird. It is a weird thing because it's not a bad show. It's just like a show that probably should never have been made.
Yeah. Or, you know, this is maybe one of those times like we talk about the notes process. You know, of creating television as being a really like bad thing where executives who don't know
it's very
television.
Stigmatized.
Like, yeah. This is maybe a point where some more notes from the studio might have helped things a little bit.
Absolutely.
So and with that.
That gets a 100 emoji from me.
With that, are you aware of the news that there may in fact be a season two of this show?
I don't. And what's messed up is that obviously if that happens, we're going to have to watch it.
Yeah, I know.
Just to see, because what the hell would you, is it, because, so help me God, if it's another suicide, I'm picketing somebody.
Well, we don't know how Alex's possible suicide goes. So that's the thing.
Well, but like if he's got tapes, like seriously, I'm making a sign.
Yeah.
I'm standing in front of a building somewhere. I don't know which building or what, but like.
I think we're done with tapes.
That aggression will not stand.
I would assume that this season would focus on bringing the rapist to justice, but
God, I would certainly hope so.
Who knows?
And you know, it's funny because Veronica Mars had a ton of rape. I mean, not to get cavalier about rape, and in fact, I would say the like persistent rape theme was one of the things that sort of led to it becoming depressing and not as good in the third season.
Yeah.
But they just. I just think they so much better. Yeah. And it's a weird thing to talk about handling rape better. But, like, obviously rape is all over our television. For God's sakes, we have an incredibly popular television show in its, like, 18th season that has a rape every episode.
Right. Well, and look, I definitely think that there are times when you can accuse Game of Thrones of doing some of the same stuff that I'm accusing this show of doing.
No question. But the difference is that takes place in a barbaric feudal world, and this is like a high school.
And this is in Marin County. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like this is a show that's worth watching and worth having an opinion on. People are talking about it. People are definitely watching it.
It just should not have happened.
The music.
That's really. Yeah. I've never felt so strongly watching something. I've hated things and loved things. I've never in my life felt so uncomfortable about, like, what was happening. Not from, like, a narrative sense. I mean, I've seen weird-ass movies that make me more uncomfortable than this ever could have. It's a high school show, for God's sakes. But from, like, a macro perspective, I've never in my life felt so strongly like this probably should not exist. It makes me super uncomfortable.
I don't know that I would go that far, but I definitely thought to myself more than once, why did you make that choice?
Yeah.
And that's not a thing you should be thinking when you're watching a show. If it takes you out of the moment to go, dude, what? Why? Why did you? Ooh, no.
Yeah. Well, but see, and that's sort of the overall question for me too, is like, why tell this story this way?
Yeah.
I don't get it.
So
I don't get what the point is, what the takeaway, what the message is supposed to be. If there's a message about suicide, about high school, if it's just bullying is bad, this is just such a bad way of driving that theme anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
I don't
absurd.
I'm a little bit more of a fan of the tape device than you are. But
see, like the tape device would be fine if she had vanished. And like maybe she's alive, maybe she's dead, maybe we find out, maybe we don't. But as a run-up to a suicide, I just don't think it works at all. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's 13 Reasons Why.
Yeah, there we go. I'm glad to get that off my chest.
Yeah, yeah. No, me too. It's hard to hold on to that for a while. So,
yeah. Relative to that, The Leftovers has been a breeze.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't know that I would be bringing you down to Pressing Corner. should we talk about something more lighthearted, or do you want to stay in the Netflix world?
We could talk a little more lighthearted, but quickly, and this is more lighthearted, and I know we don't have time to talk about it today, but Brockmire is just so fantastic. It's my favorite 30 minutes of TV every week. If you're not watching Brockmire on IFC, like, get your life in order.
Yeah, that's my mission. This season is to get people to watch The Leftovers and Brockmire. So,
well. You got one guy on both, so congratulations.
Exactly. And now I'm going to quit. all right, so I am – I don't know how far you got, but I am 3 episodes into the new season of Catastrophe.
I believe Amazon. I only watched 2, but I'm a couple episodes in.
This is a – it's a British co-production, and so they are on the British episode model, which is 6 episodes in a season. Right. Which I find unfortunate because I would like about 20 of these.
They're very short too. I mean, you know, not very. They're 30 minutes, but
30 minutes sans commercials, really though. So they're like 22 a lot of times. I feel like so.
Right, and then all 3 seasons are on Amazon in full. It's just really funny. It's a really funny show. It has some of the best. It does the best job of making those funny moments that you have in a good relationship, even if it's not ultimately a great relationship. Like, when you really connect with someone, those sorts of goofy, funny moments that happen in everyday life, I feel like the truth of that is really captured by this show.
Yeah, this show is just, it's so real. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like the relationship they have is real. The way that they make each other laugh, like in little casual moments, is real. Like, you understand why they're together. You also understand what doesn't work about them. Uh-huh. It's a show that's not afraid to humiliate either of the main characters by any stretch, but is not necessarily about humiliating the main characters. It's not Curb Your Enthusiasm, you know what I mean?
No. No.
Everything comes from the awkwardness, although there is plenty of awkwardness.
But it feels like real awkwardness. I mean, the thing I don't like about Curb Your Enthusiasm, which is a show I enjoy but don't love, is that the awkwardness feels so over the top. It's really done to make you squirm in your seat. And Catastrophe doesn't really make me squirm in my seat. It makes me be like, oh, yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. You know? Like, yeah, oh, I know that one. Yeah. I know that awkward feeling.
That's going to be rough for you.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. So... I that to me always, those sorts of things in movies and TV always resonate with me so much more than the sort of over the top stuff.
Yeah, and the supporting characters that come in and out of the universe of the show are uniformly excellent.
Oh my God, the real dick of a best friend that he has that is like the husband of the crazy lady that Sharon knows. Yeah, I'm not doing a very good
job. She's kind of a dick too.
They're both dicks, but he is funny. He's funny. Oh man, is he funny? Yeah. And who appeared on the show? Oh yeah, Donald Gleason has a funny little turn as an employment agent.
Yeah, he was funny. I had not really seen him be funny all that often, so I enjoyed that.
He's in one of my favorite romantic comedies, and he's quite cute and funny.
Yeah. So yeah, Catastrophe, that's an easy recommend.
And an easy watch. It's easy to just drop 2 or 3 of them. And I also realized in watching episodes 1 and 2 of the 3rd season that I missed season 2 and it didn't really matter.
I dare say that if you have not watched any of them, you could just bang through the whole thing in an afternoon and like not even feel like, you know, I just did a binge. You know what I mean? No, I mean,
it's literally 6 episodes, 25 minutes. It's basically, what, like an hour and 45 minutes?
Yes.
No, wait, that's wrong. 2 hours and 45 minutes of 2.5 hours maybe total per season. That's not so bad. Each season's a movie, essentially. Yeah, a long movie.
A long movie. So yeah, Catastrophe's great. Can't wait to see how the rest of the season ends. How about Dear White People?
Yeah.
Now, Dear White People dropped on Netflix this week.
Mm-hmm.
There is a movie, which apparently is not available on Netflix. Do you want to chastise me for my lack of desire to move outside of the streaming services I subscribe to? I feel like you have a bit of a rant here.
No, I don't. Whatever. Like, I'm not gonna berate you. It's just like, it seems like every other week there's something that like you're like, oh, I can't find that, or I don't want to do that, or I don't want to go to the website. If it's not on Spotify, and you know, you're just like you're showing your like curmudgeonly.
I can't tell if I'm being ultra millennial or not millennial enough.
Right. Yeah, that's an interesting question. Habits. Yeah. Right. We'll have to save that for a deeper philosophical discussion on another day.
I do value convenience. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I don't want to work that hard to watch a piece of entertainment because I have a million other pieces of entertainment that are good that I don't have to work that hard for. You know what I mean?
Right. I will say this. You watched the first three episodes of that one, you said, as well?
I think, actually, I wound up watching a fourth.
Okay. I think I only saw, again, two of them, but I can tell you that while I enjoyed the movie and while the star power of the characters in the movie is higher, I mean, Tessa Thompson plays the lead, Sam, and there's just some other people you've seen before. The content of the movie is more or less covered in exposition in the first episode or two, and with some voiceover and flashback. So you're not missing much narratively. But essentially the show picks up where the movie left off, and kind of each episode goes from a different character's perspective through a series of events.
Yeah, I would say that's fair. The first one is about a biracial student at an Ivy League institution who has a radio show.
Right.
So that one hit a little close to home for me.
Yeah.
But
did you do radio at college?
Of course, yeah. Now, if I have any problem with the show, it's a little bit the way that college radio is depicted, particularly since this is a modern show.
Nothing has been more clear throughout watching this than that they did not get a consultant to help them with the radio side of how this works.
Yeah. I mean, I went to college in the 90s when people actually listened to radio.
Right.
And, you know, college students, I should say. Lots of people listen to radio. But
sure.
College students, not so much. And, even then, people didn't – like, there was no – the whole campus was not tuned to my show when
right.
you know, when I was on. I also was not cursing, which is really clearly a thing not you can't cursing. Do.
Clearly can't curse if it's an actual radio station at all.
And most college radio shows are highly self-indulgent music for hours on end as opposed to
most
highly
of them are
self-indulgent
indie rock, yeah.
social commentary.
Yeah, no one has a talk show in college.
Right.
And also just like she's sitting there with like a four track for some reason.
Yeah, what is that?
I don't know, but it's like it's clearly not a radio board in any meaningful sense. And also like she just like turns the mic on and off sometimes at random intervals.
Yeah.
And it's unclear what's happening on the air.
They're playing a song while this is happening, or
right. And but if they are, she doesn't mention what it is ever, or like even say like back to the soft jams. You know, it's just like there's like Muzak playing in the background at all times or something. I can't tell what's going on, but I do think that's the worst part of the show.
I agree. I'm ripping the show a little bit because it was just, you know, this is a thing. It was like, wow, they're really telling my life story in the first episode.
But your life story before the sex change operation.
Right, before the sex change operation. And I didn't live in the black student hall, so I didn't have that part. But a lot of stuff that I recognized.
And what is it, Cornell? You're Cornell?
Cornell, yeah. Their Ivy League institution is fake, which I also didn't appreciate. There's eight. There's only eight. There's only going to be
well,
eight.
Well, yeah.
So,
right. That's very snobby of you to point that out.
If you're
but
not
also,
one of the eight,
I,
you're not in the Ivy League.
Sure, but also they'd have been sued if they tried to say it was any of the. Even though I believe there was a blackface party at Dartmouth within the last 5 years.
Yeah, I didn't recognize some of the stuff from my college experience, but far from me to say that it couldn't happen. I'm also old, so you know, I'm going to guess a lot has changed on my campus since the last time I was there. But the show as a whole, I thought was really, really winning. It's funny. It has a lot of interesting things to say about race, a lot of subtle points, honestly, you know, points within communities. It's really easy for a show called Dear White People to be cheap.
And to be pedantic to white people. And it's not.
It is not.
I mean, it yeah, there's a character telling white people about themselves, mostly white people who need to be told about themselves, but that's a sort of a side point. But it's also really investigating how a group of intelligent people, albeit 19 to 21-year-old people.
We'll say educated people, maybe.
Right. How they process race dynamics in 2017, which is such a complicated thing. And I think for the most part, they do a really good job of handling it, and all in such stark contrast to 13 Reasons Why and the tough issues it tries to tackle. And I also just think, like you said, it is winning. The characters, the only character who is played by the same actor is, I'm so bad with names on these shows. Troy. It's Troy.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Everyone else is different. But all of them are pretty much as good in my eyes, except maybe Coco. But I just haven't totally seen enough of her yet, I don't think. Coco in the movie was spectacular.
I watched her episode. Each episode is kind of told from the point of view of one of the characters. And, you know, it's
right.
Times and events sort of overlap as you're telling each of the stories. But the Coco episode is really solid. So
okay, all right. So I'll have to get to that.
I haven't seen the movie, so I don't have a basis for comparison. But I just love
that
Coco.
Character in the movie, and obviously Tessa Thompson. I'm in the bag for her. But I think the lead on the show is excellent. Sam.
I did not expect for this show to be so sexy.
It is. That was one of the things. Okay, so there are a couple of things, and I actually because I. I'm thinking of it. I wanted to say one of these things about The Leftovers as well, but there's an incredible amount of sex stuff in these shows.
And pretty much everyone is really hot. Like,
yeah, but that's normal.
Yeah, that's true. That's fair.
Everyone's always really hot, but you know, they're college students and everyone's banging each other. And you know, it deals with, I mean, that's one of the things it really interrogates with respect to race is how different communities view homosexuality. But it is incredibly overtly sexual and like in a pretty like 20th century liberated way.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
That's fun to see, and certainly I agree was surprising from a Netflix show. And then the other thing is it's really well, the music design, the scoring, whatever you want to call it, is both in your face and I think really good.
Yeah, I would agree. I agree.
It's very out front. And that was that's one of the things that's been the most surprising to me about The Leftovers. Both the songs they use in The Leftovers, this is a quick side note, we can get back to Dear White People, but both the songs they use that are like popular songs and the scoring are very loud and in your face and a part of the show, and I think incredibly well done.
Yeah. I would also say that The Leftovers is a gift for obscure songs as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And uses those pretty well. As is Fargo, by the way. It's a very good time for music on television. Music was certainly one of the best parts of 13 Reasons Why as well, I think. So
So
yay, music supervisors. That's
music supervisors are doing a great job, and also they're like picking from our wheelhouse probably, which helps.
It's true. That is the like most coveted job in the music industry now, because it's really how you reach people is putting music in television and movies.
Why not? I guess right.
Yeah, it's sad. But anyway, back to Dear White People, which I think was. You know, like when you think about all the stuff that we've addressed, this show addressing in the span of 3 or 4 episodes,
yeah,
it has no right to be as fun as it is. Like, it's a really fun, right, breezy show in a lot of ways. So,
totally agree. And a third, like each episode, which is they're all 30 minutes or less, really feels like a fully contained narrative that gets through a lot of stuff. I mean, I'm very impressed with the writer-director of the movie and I believe creator and showrunner and sometime director of the show, Justin Simien, I think is his name. I just think he does a great job of making these stories feel fully realized in 30 minutes.
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. Completely. Like, yeah, things feel whole in these stories, and yet there's plenty more that you kind of want to continue, and you do wonder maybe more how things happen as the story goes along for them. So there's usually some little nuggets that are left hanging out there, and I'm very curious to see how the season wraps up.
Yeah, absolutely. We should check in again when we finish it, but I'm getting a real kick out of that one.
All right. We mentioned Fargo and some of the music choices there. Are you, there seems to be...
I don't get the Fargo backlash.
Yeah, there seems to be a backlash developing. We mentioned a little bit last week, and some other people picked up on that Esquire article that was like, this is formula. And that seems to be the thing of like, oh, well, we recognize some familiar character archetypes from this.
Did you find yourself wondering if that guy was going to issue an apology after last night's episode?
I didn't. I would assume that he had seen it, because I know a lot of these episodes have been out there for people.
I guess if you're a critic, maybe you've seen it. But like, if you think this is somehow following a pattern at this point, it's just like you can assign a pattern to almost anything. Last night's episode was so bizarre and interesting,
and it just blew that pattern up for sure.
Blew up the pattern that people had in mind. But again, I'm sure if they wanted to find a way to fit this in, if that's your goal, you can do it. But I just think that's such a weird way of looking at a narrative that's interesting and fun. And again, like Carrie Coon, goodness gracious, man.
I tried to warn you about Carrie Coon.
I'm electric. So infatuated. Did you know she's like a Chicago stage actress?
I did not.
You know she's married to Tracy Letts, who is like a Chicago stage legend?
I knew none of these things.
My parents saw her in plays in Chicago, but she's just tremendous. I mean, first of all, she's barely recognizable from The Leftovers to this, even though, looks-wise, she's not so different. But, like, she just is totally transformed, is a totally different character, and the way she plays the emotions of each of them is so different. And it's just like, man, she's impressive and not unfun to look at.
No, all of those things. It's it's been quite a run for her. And I really enjoyed, I don't know if you could call this sort of a bottle episode. It's an exploration into the past life of the
I don't think we know if it's a bottle episode yet, right? I mean, it depends what happens next, and that's Noah Hawley makes such interesting storytelling choices.
Yes,
and
he does.
I think slight spoiler, to have both the flashback and the sort of cartoon animation of the book, which also is just like you know, I mean, I guess you're saying the book was this, but unquestionably the animation is nothing more than like an allegory, like it's an allegorical life tale, you know? Yeah.
I thought that style of animation was a really interesting choice.
It's just, it is. And I don't know why yet. And I don't know if I'll ever know why. And I don't know if I'll ever know if I'm 100% on board with it, but it's certainly an interesting choice. And it's certainly like my eyes were bugged out for half of that episode last night because it did so many interesting things. I mean, the flashback and then the actual interaction she has with the producer was fascinating.
Yep. Yep.
Fascinating. And it was not at all what I expected to have happen. And I also love how, and this may be, you know, a common thread across the seasons, but I think for good reason. I love how all of the investigators in each season of this show, it is the archetype we talked about of like the dogged, underestimated, underrated detective.
And a bit angelic, right?
And a bit angelic, yeah. But I'm not talking about the archetype so much as I love how they all, they always seem to find not the clue they're looking for, but a small clue that they weren't exactly looking for that leads them to the next thing.
Yeah.
I love that sort of narrative method, if you will. And I will also say specifically to this episode, it felt almost like the Coen brothers had directed it.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'd agree.
More so than most of the episodes of the show.
Plus, we got Mac from It's Always Sunny. For like
I know.
10 minutes.
An appearance for Mac. Yeah, there were a lot of good. And an appearance by that dude whose name I don't know, but who played the producer in the flashback and who is always just a hilarious,
yeah,
pompous ass.
That guy's great in everything.
He's in one of my favorite indies of the last few years, the Lake Bell feature.
The voiceover thing. He's the voiceover king.
Yeah, he's the voiceover king. It's called, I can't remember what it's called. I loved that movie, though. Yeah. Look it up.
This is what happens, man. You get old.
Yeah. You get old. You do get old. By the way, speaking of voiceover, a quick note on Dear White People. Giancarlo Esposito, who, of course, is Gus Fring on Breaking Bad and now Better Call Saul, does the voiceover for Dear White People and just has the most wonderful, soothing.
Yeah, he just crushes it. Crushes it. Deadpans all the jokes and just nails it. Yep.
Oh, he's so good. Yeah. Really, so good.
I'll watch that guy do anything. Speaking of which, I think we'll cover Better Call Saul next week. But if you are not caught up on that, get caught up on it because it's starting to move.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Right now, I mean, I know we're in May and it's sweeps, I guess, if that's still a thing. Do we still have sweeps?
Is that still a thing?
I think
I don't
it
know
is cuz we
really
still
a thing
we still have commercials, so I'm pretty sure we still have sweeps. Yes, it's the full time of the TV calendar, but man, there's a lot of really good stuff happening right now. Should we jump into sports real quick and then get the hell out of here?
Yeah, that seems reasonable. Yeah.
I'll ask this question about the NBA playoffs.
Thank God.
Which I think we've all been enjoying. Oh, I'll get to your other question later. Which we've all been enjoying, despite there not really being that many great games, per se. Like some interesting.
I don't know. There
have
been
happened.
A few pretty great games, haven't there? There haven't been any good series yet, besides Clippers Jazz.
What games stand out to you so far? Like individual games.
There were a couple of really good 3.5 quarters in the in the Golden State Portland series. There were a couple of back and forth games that were really entertaining in the Clippers Jazz. Memphis and San Antonio played some phenomenal contests with Mike Conley and Kawhi Leonard going toe to toe.
But those are things that happen. Give me a game where it's like, oh, this game went to overtime, and like, I'm not
there,
known
there
the
there were
games
two overtime games. The Gasol Conley battle where they each had like 40, and the Wall Isaiah thing that just happened a couple days ago where Isaiah had 53. I mean, there have been some really good games.
Yeah, boy, the Celtics are really fun to root against again. I'm just enjoying
really
that.
Against.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Why?
Because they're the Celtics, man. Like, I just see that parquet floor and that uniform, and there's just a visceral hatred that literally dates back, you know, sports hatred, of course, that literally dates back to my childhood. And
why though? Why the?
And they're jerks on the court. And you know, look, I think we all feel for what Isaiah Thomas is going through, and I hope he scores 53 every night and that they lose every night. yeah, I want them to lose in really uncomfortable fashion. This whole, what is it, 6-7 game winning streak on that's been going on really dismays me.
Yeah, it's 6 now. Yeah.
Yeah. My prediction of no Celtics in the conference finals is not looking great at the moment. But Washington is a very good home team. Very, in fact, one of the best home teams in the league. So,
yeah, they've got to win these two, obviously.
Yeah,
until
the Celtics went on the road, you know, I think they're still in that series. They certainly,
I agree, but I'll tell you what.
The other night, like, that's a game you got to win. You got to win.
That's the problem.
And you got to win in regulation.
And a little bit, they almost both were. Like, the first one slipped further away, but they had big leads in both games. Yeah.
So we now come to the point of my actual original question, which is, it sure is starting to feel like we're now all back on that collision course of Warriors-Cavs that everyone thought we were on at the beginning of the season, right? At least to me. Do you agree?
I think so. Right? I mean, I don't think anybody, including the Cavs, has much of a shot against the Warriors if they're healthy. I just don't. I don't think the math adds up, you know.
It does. It does look like that right now. I gotta say, and I mean, the Cavs are, you know, crushing Toronto right now, but they still don't look amazing on defense to me. And I mean,
what we're seeing is how unamazing Toronto is on defense. The numbers were skewed in the first round because they played one of the worst offensive teams in the league, in Milwaukee. So they were holding them to 75 and 80 points, but the Toronto defense is not great. And maybe more to the point, the Cleveland offense is truly great. Truly great. I mean, it's great. But we don't know how good the defense is, really. And no one's defense is good enough to stop the Warriors, but the Warriors play great defense.
Yeah. So,
and again, like, you can go man to man. I mean, LeBron and KD, slight edge to LeBron, but it's pretty close to a wash. Steph and Kyrie is heavy to Steph. And then everything else is heavy to the Warriors. Yeah. Kevin Love can't hang with Draymond. Klay's a million times better than J.R. Smith. I mean, get out of here. They just don't have and you know, I think some people
can give Cleveland the edge of the center position, I would say.
Cleveland?
I mean, right, do you take a Tristan Thompson over Zaza or JaVale?
Tristan Thompson's a better rebounder than JaVale. But I guess.
You know, not
you might
that,
take but
not
that's
that
what I was going to say
difference.
Is even yeah, exactly. And even if you look at the depth, which Cleveland really improved down the stretch, the main difference between the Warriors' depth and Cleveland's depth is name recognition, because Cleveland's got a bunch of old guys.
Yeah, I do think their bench is maybe a little bit better, but I don't think that's a huge advantage for them either. And we didn't even get to Iguodala and you know, some of the.
Well, that's the point. I mean, Iguodala is the name, but like, look, Ian Clark has been really good this year.
No, Ian Clark is a very good player, and he's
Ian Clark is a legitimate guard in the NBA who can get buckets.
He's going to get paid.
I think
in the very near future. Yeah.
Oh, I mean, I don't think he starts for a championship contender, but I think he'll be a starting two guard somewhere, and if not, he'll be a well paid sixth man.
Yeah.
And look, Sean Livingston. People may not really know or understand who he is at the level they do Darren Williams, but I'll take Sean Livingston today.
He's a very useful player. I think he's slipped a little bit from where he was a couple years ago, but
he has. He's old and he's got a hand injury right now. But I'm just saying, all things being equal, the Warriors bench, if it's a little shorter than the Cavs, it's still pretty high in quality.
Right, and they are crushing people with that bench, and the fact that. Yep. You know, Steph or KD are pretty much going to be on the floor at all times. And
you're going to have two All-Stars on the floor virtually at all times.
Yeah. Not even two
All-Stars. I mean, occasionally it ends up with Klay out there by itself.
Usually, you know what I mean? So it's rough.
And I mean, again, you can do the math on the Cavs Warriors in so many different ways. And it's just hard to add it up to where the Cavs can win. Whether you're doing it on roster, talent, and depth, whether you're doing it on just like how good they are on offense and defense, it's just they're just so damn good if they're healthy. I have a hard time seeing anyone beat them.
The Cavs case is an Adam Carolla case. Like, the Adam Carolla bit about, you know, someone tells you all this thing and then you go, yeah, but still. And the,
yes,
the Cavs
yeah,
case.
Yeah, but still.
The Cavs case is, yeah, but LeBron.
Yep.
And you know what? And when someone
it's a
goes,
pretty good case.
Right, when someone goes, yeah, but LeBron, you have to go, all right, I guess I see your point. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like right now the Spurs against the Rockets.
Right.
Like the Spurs tied up that series last night, but Tony Parker's hurt. They lost on their home floor already. Like, things are not good for that team.
No, they're not. But I just don't, you just can't count out LeBron.
But that's my point. Yeah. They're the Spurs. They're coached by Greg Popovich, and Kawhi Leonard is there. So to count them out of this series, despite things looking ridiculously stacked against them at the moment, you'd be dumb to count them out.
No.
And the same goes for LeBron when he faces the Warriors. Now, in terms of the Eastern Conference, I just don't think anyone's good enough. I think the Cavs, in a way, are vulnerable. But Toronto doesn't seem to be able to produce the offense it takes to keep up with them. And I don't see how Washington or Boston will be able to do that either, frankly.
Yeah, you know, I stole this point, and I can't remember if it's from Windhorse or David Aldridge or Zach Lowe, somebody. Mm-hmm. But LeBron wins a road game in every playoff series.
Yep. And, yeah, actually it was Windhorst and Zach Lowe were talking about that.
And that means you got to beat them twice at home. And there're just not very many teams that are going to do that. You know, I think the Warriors it may be the only team capable of doing that.
And the only team that wouldn't need to.
Yeah. The Spurs or not the Spurs, the Rockets. I think in the sense that the Rockets are going to jack up threes, and if they make 40%, there's a good chance they're going to win the game. You know, in the right circumstance, I could see them, you know, maybe taking two. But I don't know that they would shoot consistently enough over the course of seven games to beat Cleveland.
The Rockets?
Yeah.
Well, but they won't play Cleveland.
No.
You're just saying hypothetically?
I'm just saying hypothetically, yeah. They probably won't play Cleveland. I know it's not even really worth considering.
No.
I mean, look, we talked about this last week with the possibility of 16-0, right? Like, I don't think the Warriors can sweep the Rockets because for that very reason.
There's that variance game. Yeah, but I will say that same argument with a little less firepower but considerably more defense would be my argument for where the Celtics might have an outside shot at Cleveland. Because if they play the way they're playing right now, where Isaiah's just on a total other level, and they've got Rozier and Bradley and Crowder and a bunch of guys hounding the best players on the other team, that's a winning formula. Now, they're so much shorter on talent than the Cavaliers that it is pretty hard to imagine them winning that series. But the combination of really tough D, really good coaching, and a couple of playmakers, like Boston has that formula it's just still probably not enough unless Cleveland slips in some way.
Yeah, I don't see it. If Isaiah Thomas is other, you know, if you get 53-point Isaiah Thomas every night, then the Cavs have three of the four best guys on the floor. That's if you get that level of Isaiah Thomas. And if you get a substandard level of that, then it looks even worse to them.
They definitely have two of the best three. Is Kevin Love significantly better than Al Horford?
Yes.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah. Now, unless, you know, Kelly Olynyk cheap shots him and he's gone for the series, then it's
well, that's a bold strategy, Cotton. I'm not sure I agree with that. I think Al Horford's a little underrated, and
I've seen a lot of Kevin Al Horford Love's... in my life.
What's
I said? I've seen a lot of Al Horford in my life, and I feel like maybe more prime than the Al Horford you're seeing now.
But don't you think? I mean, he plays much better defense than Kevin Love.
He's playing very well right now. He's playing like
he's playing great. He really playmakes. I mean, he's a generous and capable offensive player. I don't know. I'm an Al Horford fan.
I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I just think Kevin Love's better.
I've always been an Al Horford fan. I wanted him on the Bulls instead of Joakim Noah, but we were several picks too late. Yeah.
All right, let's move. Speaking of picks too late,
I shouldn't have said anything.
I have no desire to talk about the NFL drafts other than
I
want to check in with you, Bears fan, about how you're feeling about the Bears' big move. I feel like I have an idea.
Check in. Sounds like you care how I'm feeling, which you clearly don't because we're talking about.
Because I really just want to revel in your misery.
And believe me, you are far from my only friend who wants to revel in my misery. I will say this. I'm not
like
that
one
miserable.
Of those guys in the SportsCenter videos where you're, you know, like,
no,
like,
I'm not that guy. I'm not that guy because I know the truth of this. And the truth of this is very, very simple. If Mitch Trubisky is good, who cares? If Mitch Trubisky is not good, who cares? I mean, in reference to the trade, right? All that matters is the quarterback any good? Now, if we actually take a step back and try to analyze how good is the Bears front office, this raises some uncomfortable questions about whether you're being bamboozled. And it certainly appears that they were.
Yeah,
now
they got took.
But again, if I told you Mitch Trubisky is, say, the next, I'm going to try to be realistic here, the next Philip Rivers.
Okay.
All right. Not Peyton Manning, okay? Not Tom Brady, but a perennial Pro Bowl type level guy. Would you, if you thought there was a 10%, if you thought there's an 80% chance that's who Trubisky is, and a 10% chance someone else was going to trade up in front of you, you make that deal.
Look, I am improbably going to say something that I think that might make you feel better in that, yeah, it's, look, you know, in a sense, it's a little bit like almost in a fantasy draft in the first round of like, if you like your guy and you know that your guy is not going to be there the next time you pick,
you got to take him.
Take your guy. You know, do what you got to do to get your guy. The
right.
Falcons,
now,
you know, the Falcons made a trade up in the draft a couple of years ago. I mean, they made a trade this draft too, but they made a trade up in the draft a couple of years ago to get their guy. Even though Bill Belichick, of all people, told them they were crazy, this guy wasn't any good. They gave
and to
up
be fair,
three drafts worth of guys to get the guy, and I would do it again because I love
the
guy.
That's the point.
You know?
Is Bill Belichick, probably knowing who Julio Jones is, still wouldn't make that trade.
Right. Now, you look
and, up. And there's something to be said for the process. And the process that went on with the Bears on draft day seems to be somewhat of a failure. Yeah. But again, all that really matters is the quarterback good?
What happens
and
if Ryan Mike Glennon
Pace,
is good?
The GM, he just bet his job on Mitch Trubisky. So if he's good, great job, GM. If he's no good, new GM.
What happens if Mike Glennon is good?
Well, that's an interesting question. But
I mean, I don't really think we got to worry about it, but let's just say.
I think there's a decent chance Mike Glennon is fine.
But I'm not talking about fine. What if he's good?
Then there are worse problems to have than
having two quarterbacks.
Yeah. Two potentially good quarterbacks.
Yeah. I agree. Then you're in the Garoppolo situation.
And for a franchise that honestly, if Mike Glennon is good, he'll be the best quarterback I've watched for an extended period in my lifetime.
Yeah.
So like the idea of like, oh no, what if the quarterback's good is so insane to a Bears fan.
No, that's true. But you know, you've got a lot of holes to fill. And now you've got fewer picks to do it. That's the other side of that. So,
yeah, but I do wonder if part of that is a little bit deliberate as well, because I think they later traded out for some future year draft picks. And, like, I wonder if there's a little bit of let's dig into the rebuilding process.
I was going to say yes or no. The Bears are going to stink out loud this year, right?
Well, what's interesting is I don't think they have to. They were surprisingly decent on defense when healthy last year. And they are getting some guys back from injury as well, theoretically. So if they get good quarterback play, I think they can be an above 500 team. But that's a big if.
Yeah, I'm rolling with they're going to lose a lot of games. I'm just rolling with that.
I mean, if Mike Glennon... Strangely enough, the rest of the team is, you know, has raised itself over the last couple of years from stink bomb to average enough that the season kind of turns on the quarterback.
Yeah. All right. You know, I had the thought the other day. Have you had this thought of like, holy crap, it's May?
I have that thought every day about whatever month we're in all the time since I was like 27.
Yeah. I just feel like we're going to look up and football season will be upon us. Like, you know what I mean? It's going to happen in a blink.
No question about that.
Not the worst thing, I suppose.
No, it's not so bad.
Vancouver's a football right now. All right. So let's wrap it up. Homework. Better Call Saul is definitely a part of that if you're not caught up. And you had some movies that you were trying to get me to watch. Is that right?
Yeah, but let's just start with one because I know this is like asking a lot of you. Have you heard of The Lost City of Z?
I have heard of The Lost City of Z, but I couldn't tell you more than the name rings a bell.
That's probably not the worst thing, and that's more or less where I'm at as well, I think. I mean, I know a little bit more about that. About it, but I am very excited to see it.
Should I not be IMDb-ing it right now?
For like 24 hours now. It's starting to get dodgy. It's an adventure movie in the jungle or some such thing, and it sounds like a blast, and it's gotten great reviews, and I think we should watch it for next week.
All right. Lost City of Z. Period piece with a bunch of British folks.
Yeah. You cool with that? You up for this?
I'm not super excited, but I'm going to do it.
It's not like Sense and Sensibility period piece. Like, what's your problem?
I've already explained my problem with period pieces in that I do not enjoy visiting times in which I would not personally be welcome. But that's just that's just the thing. That's just the thing for me. That's just the thing of me. But it's all right. Yeah. No, I'm down to watch the movie. It's not like I haven't seen any movies set in the 1920s.
I have some other movies I want to see too. If you'd rather, I pick another. But this one I'm excited about. It's like it's being compared to Apocalypse Now and stuff.
All right. I'm in. What else we got?
I feel like such a disappointment so often. You make me feel like such a disappointment.
No, man, I want to watch. You're excited about it. I want to watch it. And, you know, maybe I'll rip it. It's fun.
I like ripping certainly stuff. Thought of you.
It's no fun when we like everything, right?
No, for sure. I certainly thought of you during Dear White People when they started playing the No Name song.
By the way, one more thing while we're here. The fake show, the fake scandal. Show that they do.
Oh my god, so funny!
Yeah, and all the jokes around it are tremendous. I love it. All right.
I never even watched Scandal, and I thought it was tremendous. Me neither. So.
But you can totally tell what they're doing.
Oh, 100. I knew it was Scandal, 100%. And obviously, it's a like absurdist version of it, but hilarious.
Yeah, so great, so great. The Pledge of Allegiance in that one episode is, yeah. All right, and on that note, we all have things to do, so let's go do them.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The lights out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.